Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Delta Flyers Journey Through the Wormhole with Quark, Dax, and their good friends, Tom and Harry. Oh, did I do that the right way? No, Tom and Harry. Join us as we make our way through the episodes of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Your hosts for today are Terry Farrell, our very intelligent, creative, and crafty science officer, Garrett Wong, our somehow immortal forever ensign who died 8 times but keeps coming back to life, and myself, your favorite helmsman, Robert Duncan McNeil.
Director, producer, writer. He wears a few hats.
A few hats, including this actually is my first rodeo hat today.
I love that hat. And the fact
and
oh, look at this hat.
Mind
that
your
wearing.
Own damn business.
Mind your own damn business.
It's hat day.
Yes.
Yes.
And you forgot your other. You said all those things. And former lizard is the other thing that
yes,
you didn't throw in there.
I was
former
a
salamander. I don't know. Yes. What would you call it? Were you a salamander or lizard?
I was an amphibian. Yes, I was an amphibian.
Former amphibian. Let's say that.
So you were like a gecko.
Yes, kind of like a gecko.
He was more evolved than a gecko, I think. So yeah. I'm going to say former amphibian, former fabulous amphibian, amazing amphibian.
Thank you.
Something good there. Okay.
I don't want to be rude, but isn't a gecko a amphibian?
It is.
A lizard an amphibian? I thought a lizard was a reptile.
Oh. Our favorite reptilian slash amphibian slash something in.
Something in, yes.
Well, there's more education between the two of you, but I do believe that I'm right.
I don't know if there's more education. I think
there may not be.
You both
Garrett went
to college.
He went to college. I didn't.
You
really
didn't go to
Robbie
college?
Didn't. No.
No.
No. Mm-hmm.
I went to acting drama school.
He went to life college, Terry.
Yeah,
that's what
college.
He went to. So
yeah, that's what I did too.
Yeah.
New York City.
That's fine.
Did you move to New York first, Robbie?
I was 17 when I moved to New York. Yeah.
Me too.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, we were.
Look
babies.
How many parallels.
Yeah,
there are.
I took my GED and I saved up my money.
Yeah.
And I took a train, one way ticket.
Me too. I took a train.
Shut up. Are you serious?
I had a trunk. I had my trunk from summer camp, my black trunk from summer camp.
Okay.
Filled with stuff and a like a duffel bag and a trunk.
Terry, you did
train.
Not have a trunk from summer camp, correct? You did not have a trunk from summer camp.
I had a broken suitcase from my grandmother I taped shut.
Yes. I had taped my trunk shut, too.
A box with some pots and pans and little bits and bits that my mom gave me.
Oh.
I know.
I can't believe we took trains to New York to move. How old school.
It's so old school. Amtrak.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love trains.
I do too.
And it was overnight.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Because you were going from Iowa, right?
Mm-hmm. It was kind of scary, actually.
Wow.
If either of you end up collaborating on a project, your production company should be called Train to New York Productions.
Yes. Yes, it should.
Yeah.
We just incorporated just now.
There you go.
Just now.
And we're releasing three films this year. It's very exciting.
Oh, my God. Stop it. I'm so excited. Who am I working with?
Let me finish our intro. We're not even done with our intro.
I know.
This is the first we've ever stopped the intro in the middle of the intro to have introduction banter. It's introductory banter, which is really cool. We don't have to do everything in order. Time is not linear in the wormhole, so we don't have to have linear time here either. So for the complete version of this podcast, including all bonus segments, check out patreon.com/the Delta Flyers and sign up to become a patron today.
We thank our patrons.
Join
too
us.
Our patrons are incredible, and the community that's developed around this podcast and the Patreon community is awesome. Bunch of awesome people, so thank you all.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
How's everybody doing? pretty good. Yeah. No, speechless. You're speechless. No, no. You're so good.
All Terry did was this. She went like this. She went like that. All we heard was like a quick little breath, and that was it.
Yeah.
We're waiting.
There's so
well,
much.
Well, I was just at the doctor.
Yes.
That's right.
And had to have x-rays on my hips and lower back. So, yeah, some arthritis pain. It's not fun.
No.
And you know, there, you know, you've gotten way past, well, now you're that, you are.
When they start using those words.
Right? Yes. Right? Yeah. We've gotten to be that age or around that age or whatever. Now it's just, now you're 60. So we're taking x-rays.
We're x-raying everything.
If it's bad, we're doing bone density. It's like, oh God. I mean, I know it's arthritis, but.
But you're very active, like you said, you were saying earlier, like you've done yoga forever and running and all kinds of, like, yeah.
Well, I used to be way more active, but those things, kickboxing and running, really, it does a number on your body and you start to feel it. Some people sooner than later, and others of us, it catches up with us later. So I don't do a lot of the things that I found really helpful to kind of get my energy out or and anxiety, because now understanding that I late diagnosed ADHD, why it made so much sense that if I was feeling overwhelmed, going for a 3-mile run really made me feel a lot better. Yeah.
Well, because of the impact of the kickboxing and the running on your joints and your arthritis, could you now do maybe a swimming workout, a non-impact
Swimming's
workout?
Supposed to be great.
Yeah.
That true. Could help you, right?
Yeah, I joined a tennis and racket club. Apparently, it's nice. Too hard to get into the tennis lessons, but we have an indoor and an outdoor pool.
There you
That's
go.
Great.
Yeah, and the swimming really makes a lot of difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get it
I
all
like
out
that
there,
a lot.
Right? Just swim in laps. Yeah.
Swim in laps.
Laps. Swimming lap.
Swimming
I would swim
lap.
Thank you, Dr. Gawa. He's my new PT.
You're welcome. I'm your PT. I'm your PT
He
consultant.
Did start in medical school. He did go into
did
college for
yes,
medical
he did.
School.
Pre-med. So, pre-med. Pre-med. Yeah. I said pre-med. That's how I called it. Pre-med.
But we knew what you meant.
Okay.
Maybe that's why you didn't
that's
finish
why I
medical
didn't finish. Because I thought it was pre-mid, but it was actually pre-med.
Yeah.
I didn't want to go with that.
Yeah. How are you guys?
Yeah. How are you, Robbie?
How am I? I'm good. I'm good. It's gotten cold here. It was in the 40s this morning when I woke up.
Oh, that's awesome.
Cold. Like suddenly. And we got a warning last night for a freeze warning or something overnight. So
that's exciting.
It is exciting. And the trees are starting to change a little. And
oh,
yeah, it's nice.
I love that.
Yeah.
Not yet here. How about you, Gawa?
Oh, I had a crazy flight. So I went.
Where are you?
I'm in Calgary now. So
okay.
What happened was we recorded on Tuesday. No, when did we record?
Ago, yeah,
yeah 2 days ago, right?
Ago.
So Wednesday, yeah. So Wednesday night after recording, I took a red eye. No, sorry, I took a flight from Vegas to LA. And then I took a red eye from LA to Dallas at 12:48 in the morning. And then I got in at 11 a.m. to Calgary yesterday. So completely out of
wow.
It.
Wow. You did it the hard way.
Oh, I did it the hard way because I had to pick up. I left a package in Los Angeles that I had to pick up that I totally forgot about. So I was like, okay, I've got to go to LA first, and then head to Dallas and then to
I don't
Calgary.
Know how you do it.
Yeah,
I
it was
do
tough.
Not know how
wow.
You do it.
So that's where, yeah, just doing the regular traveling thing. So
I
and
have
it's, you know what,
like,
it was fine, but it was fine. When I was young, right? When I was in my 20s and 30s, traveling extensively was okay. But now that I'm in my 50s, it's become a process,
it's hard.
A journey, a obstacle course, you know, whatever you
you're
want
gonna
to
have to have
it.
Wow. X-rays from all your flying.
I will probably
you're gonna have to have X-rays. You know,
yeah.
I try to avoid even driving into town. That's
really?
How much I like to not travel.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm that way too. I was actually so bummed that my appointment took so excessively long because I was like, oh, well, I'm going to be in town. I can do these things and those things.
Yeah.
Nope. Got to
Didn't do
turn around
anything.
And come back.
Yeah.
I'm glad I don't live in town though, because you have this kind of similar thing, right, Robbie?
Yeah. We're kind of pretty rural. And yeah, I took a hike this morning, took the dog for a hike right outside. And that was my
nice.
traveling. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the kind of traveling I like.
I like that traveling too.
Yeah.
We've got some birthdays though to talk
Oh, yeah,
about.
we do. We do. We
What? Do.
do. Oh, I see Elaine Ferguson,
Yes.
October 28th. Happy birthday, Elaine.
Happy birthday, Elaine.
Happy birthday, Elaine.
We've also got Daryl Chang. Daryl, it's your birthday on October 30th. Happy birthday, Daryl.
Hey, it's your birthday. Hey, it's your birthday. Happy birthday, Daryl.
Happy birthday to the plant master himself, Daryl. Daryl wrote a book,
He did. Yes, he
actually,
did.
Terra Faire. Yeah.
About
It's
plants.
about house keeping plants in your house alive and doing all the things that you need to
I need
do.
that book.
You need his
We
book. I
have
need
that
it. I don't
book.
have plants
We
yet
have that.
because
Yeah,
I'm
we
afraid
all.
they're going to die because I travel too much.
We're
Yeah,
going to get
no,
you a
he's.
copy of Daryl's book.
Daryl's book is very, very good. So, yes.
Mm.
Also, we have another birthday, Jocelyn Pina. Happy birthday, October 31st. She's a Halloween baby. Happy
That is
birthday.
the best.
Very cool. I don't know
Happy
anyone.
birthday, Jocelyn. You don't,
No, I
but you
don't.
do
Do
now.
you know other people with October 31st birthdays, guys?
I
I do know
don't.
someone. Really?
Yes, and it's not on the top of my head right now.
But you got to agree, it's rare. There's probably only one person in your life that you've met
Totally
with that
rare.
birthday. Come on now.
Oh, yeah,
Halloween
well, my
birthday.
son's birthday is on Christmas Eve, so I can get that phenomenon of
He's
like having a
24,
big
12, 24.
holiday. Yeah.
Does Max feel like he doesn't get a full birthday, 100% birthday because he's
Yeah.
sharing it with Christmas Eve? Yeah.
Well, I don't think that part bothers him so much, or bothers is probably isn't the right word, but I feel like he's always, even though we had birthday parties for him, it could never be on his birthday.
Yeah, because everyone's already at their
You got stuff to
in-laws' home,
do.
whatever. Yeah, you're right. It's
Exactly.
difficult. And if
Yeah,
you think
people
about
aren't
it, in
gone.
college, in school, nobody could celebrate his birthday because they're already gone home from
They're
fi for
already,
after finals, right? They're at home
yeah.
for holidays at that point. And that was
Yeah.
like me because my finals week was always during my birthday, December 15th at UCLA. All finals were during that week, so
Oh,
nobody could celebrate with me.
no, and that's not happy.
No.
No, finals are never happy.
No one wants finals week.
No.
That's why I didn't go to college.
Wait,
Is
wait.
there
Yeah,
more?
there's more.
Yes, Holly Schmidt, November 3rd. Happy birthday, Holly.
Happy birthday, Holly. And take care of those potatoes. You know I love your potatoes. And that's
Happy.
not a euphemism, people. Don't go there.
People are gonna read into that. You're like,
No,
Robbie
and he's not
McNeil
calling her a
likes Holly's
potato.
potatoes,
That
is
is
what's
not a
gonna happen.
euphemism.
Yeah, it wouldn't be, would it?
Happy
It's not like you called her
birthday.
peaches.
Happy birthday, Iowa Holly.
And we also want to give a shout out to Jeremiah Brown, one of our veterans with the Delta Flyers. Birthday's on November 3rd. Happy, happy birthday, Jeremiah.
Happy birthday, Jeremiah.
Happy birthday to our resident master of miniatures, master of action figures, and creating, what is it? Stop motion.
Stop motion, yes.
Yeah, he does
Oh,
that,
cool. He does
Terry. I
some
mean,
cool,
he'll do
really
Janeway
creative
in
stuff.
Paris, doing stuff, and it's
Oh,
crazy.
he must
He's
be
so
very
good.
patient.
He's very Patience is an
Yes.
understatement for what this man does. He also has Janeway's couch, the actual couch in her ready
From the
room
set.
from the set that
Oh,
he
that's so
purchased at
sweet.
auction at his home. So he has a
Yeah.
museum, basically. So happy, happy, happy birthday to Jeremiah. Let's jump into it. Poetry synopsis. Limerick, please, Mr. McNeil.
Okay, here we go with my limerick synopsis for tribunal. I always thought it was tribunal. I literally, my entire
Really?
life, yes, this is one of those moments
Wow.
where you kind of go, oh, I've been thinking that was a different word my entire life. I thought it was tribunal.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh, it sounds good though. It sounds like a slightly dyslexic issue. I do those
You
things
can
all
see
the
I didn't
time,
go to
Maximilian.
college.
Do you know that I call Armin Armand?
You
Yes,
did? When?
Max told me that that's what I do. And do you know what? I talked about him the other day and I was talking to Nana and I said Armand and I heard myself say
And
it,
you
but she
heard
didn't
yourself
correct
say
me. And
it?
I
Yeah.
was like, oh my, I add consonants
Yeah.
or vowels to words that
Yeah.
don't belong there. I think it's just a scramble. It's just a little dyslexic scramble in my brain.
You're being creative, I think. I would say you're being creative, like my tribunal role.
You guys are the best brothers ever.
I want to ask Robbie, when did you realize that it wasn't tribunal in preparation for this episode?
Last night, yesterday, when I watched this episode.
Oh my God.
Literally did. I was like, isn't that tribunal?
You see, Star Trek is educational.
It
helps.
It really is. It's very educational.
Just so you know, the original title of this episode was Dark Tribunal, but according to you, it would have been Dark Tribunal.
Which I think is better. It's a better title.
It is actually, funeral. It flows better. Tribunal. It needs an extra.
Can we another all syllable? Decide just to you. Change it? Thank
yeah.
you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Tribunal. Tribunal sounds incomplete. Tribunal.
It does.
The tribunal.
Something's
the tribunal.
Missing.
You're on tribunal, and then I bet it feels pretty complete.
It feels pretty complete there. But for Robbie's sake, I'm going to start referring to it as tribunal from this
Thank
point
you.
Forward.
Okay. Yes, let's try to like change it. That word, people. Yeah, come on.
Let's try it.
Okay, here we go with a limerick for tribunal. Lol. I can't even say it. Okay, here I go. I'm going to say my poem.
Yeah.
Miles is arrested after he sees Boone from Setlick 3. No O'Brien vacation. Miles is a detainee. His voice recordings and exhibit, the judge thinks Miles did it. But Cardassians really owe Miles an apology.
Nice.
G-man. That's awesome. That was
apology.
Awesome.
Yeah, you got to
also emphasize. You have to make up for my absence.
Yes, I know. We're so sad. Terry told us she didn't have a poem for today.
That's okay.
I didn't. I'm
That's
so
right.
sorry.
It's okay. That's it's right. okay. Don't feel it's, bad.
Don't. Yes.
I feel a little bad.
No.
No, don't. Don't. Because Garrett's going to knock it out of the park with this haiku.
Haiku. You guys are amazing.
Here's my haiku for tribunal. Vacation for chief. Arrested by the Cardies. Cisco brings fake Boone.
Nice.
There you go.
Very, very nice.
I just like my haikus to be very theatrical. And that's how I deliver them. They're not very
Yes, you do.
Zen
You're
a very dramatic
or Japanese.
Person.
I thank you.
You have a lot of passion.
I do energetic yes. haikus is what I do.
Yes, you that's do.
What, yes, thank you.
Who's
all
our
right.
guest stars?
Guest stars, yes. Raglan Chow, first of all, who we all know and love.
Adore.
And
love and adore.
We interviewed
oh
her.
Gosh.
That was so amazing.
Isn't
right?
she the best?
She's so good. She's so good.
I didn't get to see her in LA. I had too
yes.
much going on.
Patreon patrons, you were very lucky to get Miss Rosalind Chow. We were all very lucky to get her.
All of us.
Mm-hmm,
yes.
Mm-hmm.
What a talent.
And she talked for a long time with us.
She
I feel
really
like it
did.
Was 2 or 3 hours. It was
She's
a long
so friendly.
Interview. She
I
was
bet
great.
She probably just loved hanging out with you guys.
We also have Fritz Weaver as Kovat.
Wow.
He's the public defense attorney that basically never wins. He won the Tony for the role of Jerome Malley or Malley in the original Broadway production of Child's Play. So that's pretty good.
I did the LA production or a LA production of Child's Play
you
with
did?
Gregory Harrison and William Atherton. And
ooh,
yeah, it was a great production. It's a great play. A little dated, a little
right.
Yeah,
but still, but
well, a lot of them are.
Yeah, to win a Tony.
If you're going
is...
for the classics.
Yeah.
He reminded me of, was Herman Munster Edwin?
Yes.
Yeah.
When he first came on, I went,
I thought the same thing.
He's
I was
not
like,
alive. He's not alive. For... It couldn't have been him. I would have lost my mind if he was, I would have been like,
if Herman Munster was on DS9.
I know. Oh my God. I love the Munsters and the Addams family.
Terry's like, Fritz Weaver, whatever. But if Herman Munster, Fred Gwynne was there.
Oh, that's so
I
terrible.
But I'm going to so be honest sorry. With you. I thought the exact same thing. The minute
you
he
did.
Came on, I don't know
too.
What if it was about his makeup, how that
makeup.
Cardassian makeup was.
Yeah.
He looked very Herman Munster.
He did.
First thought. But he did win the Tony, which is an accomplishment for any actor
Huge.
To win an actual Tony. This is the theater, the theater award, basically.
Huge.
For, yeah, it's very big. He did pass away at the age of 90 on November 26th, 2016. So,
90.
Mm-hmm. He made it
life.
To 90. That's not
That's
bad.
That's a good life. Yeah.
It's a good life.
That's
we
good all, life.
Mm-hmm. We also have Caroline Lagerfeld as Mockbar. She has appeared on many, many other sci-fi shows like Buffy, X-Files, Gotham, and she worked with Richard Poe, who plays Golovec, who is also in this episode in one mm-hmm. of those aforementioned TV shows. We have John Beck, who plays Raymond Boone. Beck is best known for portraying the character of Mark Grayson on 67 episodes of the TV series Dallas.
That's
why
he
looks familiar. I was like, he's so familiar, but I don't know where.
I wasn't a religious watcher of Dallas, but Yes, that's why he looks familiar.
But you watched it enough to make him familiar in your database.
Yeah, his face. It was like, I know his face and I don't know why.
That's him. Richard Poe is back as Avec. And of course, there's also Julian Christopher, who is the Cardassian voice. You remember when O'Brien is thrown into that prison area and all you see is the dark figure there that's like speaking to him, take off your clothes or something like that is what he says. He did play Hagon in the TNG episode Code of Honor, which is the reason why I never watched TNG. For those of you who remember from the Delta Flyers days, I explained that story. But he was credited in that episode as James Lewis Watkins and not Julian Christopher. So completely different name. So maybe he thought that he needed a who knows? I'm just...
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, theorizing on that. But he was one of the actors considered for the role of Worf. So Michael Dorn, and he were both competing for Worf. So who knows? He does have a very resonant low voice. So I can see him doing Worf if he did get Worf, but he didn't. Written by Bill Dial, directed by none other than Commander Sisko, Avery Brooks. Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
First episode.
First time he directed, right?
Season two.
Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
so he matches you. You did season two as well, Robbie, right?
I did. I did late season two. It was my first directing.
Voyager. Yeah.
Of Voyager. And this is late season two of DS9. Yeah.
So you matched Avery. Yeah. You
were the very about first. The same time.
Yeah. So, but is he, and he would be the first DS9 actor to direct too, correct?
No. Seems like it.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. That's what it
Renee
looks like.
Renee must be next.
Okay. Evidently, he directs 9 or 8 other episodes of DS9. I did not know that.
Oh, wow.
So,
wow. Yeah.
The plot of this episode, guys, was based on a statement made by Gul Dukat in the episode The Maquis Part 2. So he says, on Cardassia, the verdict is always known before the trial begins, and it's always the same. So Iris Stephen Bear stated later that one line gave us the concept for the whole episode. Just from that line of the episode. Yeah.
It's funny because I thought the reverse. I thought they had this episode in mind, and so they put that line in earlier.
Oh, to track it earlier?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But it was reversed. Interesting. Because I do remember that moment when he said that.
Right.
It jumps out at you because you're like, oh, wow. That's not justice to figure out the verdict ahead of time.
Yeah. Which is very interesting.
Interesting.
A lot of people do feel that this plot takes an inspiration from the novel The Trial by Franz Kafka. Mm. So that book tells the story of a man arrested and prosecuted by an inaccessible and bureaucratic authority with the nature of the crime revealed neither to him nor to the reader. The Cardassian court is reminiscent of the court described in Kafka's work, The Trial. So that's one parallel.
Well, let's dive into it. We start off in Ops, the very first scene, and I wrote down Disco O'Brien. His outfit was like... It was like the open shirt and the kind of tight sports pants. And I don't know. It's just like, that looks like, an ad from the 70s of like JCPenney wear or something.
My goodness.
I thought it was a look.
I thought he looked great because it was so nice to see him out of uniform.
Out of uniform. Yeah. Oh, I thought it looked great, but it definitely was an homage to like Saturday Night Fever or something to me.
Oh my goodness.
This is directly from my reaction video for this episode. I'm gonna say it now, or at least part of it. When he came on, I said, he's competing on Dancing with the Stars. That's a Dancing with the Stars outfit.
Yeah, that works
he's ready to compete.
So. I almost said, is he?
Yeah.
With that outfit,
that
he could.
Convincing.
With that outfit, he sure could.
He sure could.
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
But Robbie, where is he going?
Well, he's going on vacation is where
Shut
he's going,
up.
Terry.
Finally,
no,
he's going on
I'm
vacation.
I'm not kidding.
Tell me
he's
more.
He's going on vacation. Dax and Kira are trying to reassure him, get him out the door, but he's very nervous to leave. He just doesn't seem to want to go.
No.
Finally, he goes down the lift. He leaves. They kick him out. They don't kick him out, but they like shoo him away. Sisko comes out hiding from his office. He's like, is he gone yet? And he pops back up on that lift. Just his head pops up.
Oh, my word.
And I laughed so hard at that scene. That
it was very funny.
I laughed so hard. After Sisko orders him to then depart or
yeah, disembark his station.
Disembark, yeah, right?
And yeah. then it, and then his head goes, okay. Boom. Yeah, that yeah. moment right there is the laughter part, right? The minute he
that
goes
was
like,
hilarious.
He goes, "Hi, sir," and he goes down. You can't.
The timing
not.
Was perfect.
Yes.
Very funny.
And
so we
know,
have to give it to the crew because
yes.
they're the ones who
that time the buttons and yeah.
yeah. Yeah.
Or was that a direction from Avery? Did Avery say time it so
sure.
that he, you know what I'm saying?
It's
that,
a direction,
was that his idea?
But they yeah. did it.
They did do it. And it looked great.
Right.
Very funny.
It did. It's funny that you say Avery's direction, because I will say up front, I noticed a lot of very actor-friendly kind of choices in this episode, more than normal. Like bits and moments. It felt like, I can see the actor's work a little more in this episode, moment to moment. Do you know what I mean?
Mm. Yeah.
And I'm sure that's because Avery coming into it as an actor is really looking at trying to milk these moments.
Yeah.
So he did a really good job there. Hmm. We go to the promenade next. O'Brien's just kind of running along, almost drops. He's got a pile of pads with him, which later we'll learn he brought along on vacation, brought a lot of work. But he's got a pile of pads. He's fumbling with the pads, almost drops them, passes some guy, and then he turns around. Turns out it's an old friend who lives and works on the Cardassian side now, a guy named Boone. He says, "Boone? O'Brien, Miles O'Brien, we served together on the Rutledge." So it's an old friend he runs into. And
co-worker, right?
A co-worker, yeah. And Miles reminds him about the border wars and Setlik 3. They talk about that they were together on Setlik 3 during some pretty rough battles. Boone says, "Well, that's what made me leave Starfleet, was Setlik 3. And Miles says, "Oh, well, that's why I stayed." And then Miles heads off. So interesting little reunion with his old buddy, but clearly they took away different things from their experience.
Yeah.
Getting that sense.
Clearly on opposite sides of the fence.
Yeah.
But also at the end of that scene, the way that Avery chose to shoot that, you do see, they split apart. So Miles goes on, and then Boone kind of like, he's still smiling. And then all of a sudden he turns away, and you catch it on the reverse. As he turns away, the smile drops completely. So now, something's up already from that tiny little tidbit. Yeah.
Not just a friend. He's there for something.
But then he pulls out that little recorder.
Yeah. Yep. In the next scene. Right.
Yeah. So, the next scene, he goes into a closet or something, yeah. some dark area, pulls out a little hand recorder, and you hear that he recorded Miles's voice.
Right.
So you know that he's there for some nefarious purpose. Mm-hmm. And I will say, I'm going to just front load my feelings. These two scenes where he runs into an old friend and the thing you're talking about, Garrett, like the turn and dropping the smile and then seeing the recording. I
Is
wish
it telegraphing?
These scenes weren't in. It's so telegraphing.
Okay, so you don't want to see that at all.
They had not done these two scenes.
Yeah, it was too quick to show us that.
Okay. Yeah, and it kind of ruins where we're going. I'll tell you why I think it ruins it, but yeah.
But it's already ruined in the next scene, though, because he pulls out the thing and you hear the recording. You know right there, boom, bad. So there's not
That's
much
what I'm
time.
Saying. All of it, like those two scenes.
So maybe they shouldn't have shown Boone's face then in the second shot then at all?
I don't know. We can talk about it in the missing scenes. I have a thought to talk about in that section.
Yeah.
But
all right.
But this was a bummer to me because I was like, well, now we know. But where's this going that's going to keep it interesting?
Yeah.
And it didn't go anywhere that was, in my opinion, interesting because we knew this. Because from the beginning.
There's no red herring. This is the bad guy.
This is the bad guy.
And now, how are we going to catch him? And what is he going to do with whatever he's going to do?
Yeah.
What is he going to do that we're going to have to catch him for?
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have to listen anymore.
Yeah.
We're done. It was super nice.
We're done.
It
was a great, great to see you. Great episode, but it's ruined already.
You guys have great hats. I love the hats that you're wearing, and your backgrounds look good. But we're done for the day.
We're
so
done,
everyone, just enjoy your day.
Ruined.
Go read a book. Walk amongst nature and have fun. Bye bye.
Meanwhile, we go into the runabout next. Miles and Keiko are there, headed on their vacay. Keiko asks if he brought the holocam. Oops, didn't bring it.
No.
And he's doing some work on those pads, that pile of pads. And she asks, "How much work did you bring?" And he gets it that he's working too much. She sits down. He goes over and upside down kisses her, which I thought was very funny. It's like he sort
It
of
was
falls into
cute.
like she's cradling him and he's upside down. It was cute. It was cute.
It was cute, and it was also different in a way. You know, it was odd, an odd choice. And honestly, when I saw this more than once, and the first time I saw it, I didn't see directed by. And then when I went back, I go, oh, well, that makes sense. That's like, because
Yeah.
Avery's so unique in his delivery of his lines.
Creative
They're so
man.
outside the box. And for Keiko to sort of be kissing Miles in that position is outside the box to me. So I said,
Yeah.
oh, it's Avery directed.
Well,
So,
maybe not in real life, but certainly in films, they usually
Yes.
do a much more traditional kind of,
Yes.
yeah, male
Yes.
female
Where the
stereotype.
Yes, but I do find it funny, guys, that he had those stacks and stacks of pads, because we all know one thing in this day and age, your iPad can it hold an incredible amount of information. You don't
Yes, your
need
phone
eight
can
of them. Yeah,
hold.
your phone alone. But back
Yes.
in the early in
Yeah.
mid 90s, no one understood that
They didn't
concept.
have that
So
yet.
no, so that's why he has
Yeah.
stacks of pads there.
Well, we
Yeah.
did have, we were just,
The iPhone
not,
hadn't even
were
come
we
out
just
until
getting computers?
computers.
Ugh,
Yeah, kind of computers were.
laptops, but
Laptops were kind
not in
of
a,
still newish.
Yeah. There were
yeah.
no
It
pads
is kind of
though. There was
funny
no
though.
iPad at that point, you know, none. But the thought process is they made it look like he was carrying books and manuals, right?
Yeah,
Like
yeah.
stacks of those, but they were pads. But in
I
reality,
think
we
that's
all
a great
understand.
observation.
Yeah, it's something I just came up with.
Do you remember Marvin Rush got the first Apple Newton, which was a little handheld?
Yes. Oh, he was showing that thing off to all of us. He
Oh,
loved
yes.
that gadget. He was like, "Hey guys, look at this." And we were like,
It
"Oh my
was like a
God."
little handheld notepad or
With a
notebook
stylus, right?
with
Didn't he
a
have a stylus?
stylus?
Yeah. And
We
Marvin
used to
was
have something like
always,
that and you could write in it.
yeah,
Yes.
that's
And it would
exactly
do
it.
the sentence in, yeah.
I
Or
remember
write on the,
Marvin.
I had one of those.
Yeah,
Those were
Marv.
obsolete real fast though. That was
Really? They were.
weird.
They did
They
not
used
last.
my
Marvin, when he got his
Palm
first
Pilot.
Newton, oh, Palm Pilot, that was another one.
That's another one.
When
That's
Marvin
what I
got the
had.
Newton, though, Marvin was like, "See, Star Trek is real. It's becoming real. I've got this
Aww.
Apple Newton, and it's like Star Trek." So excited.
So cute.
Yeah.
Oh my
It was
God.
awesome. It was awesome. There is an alert comes through in the middle of their kissy kiss. It's a Cardassian patrol. Miles calls for shields up, and he sends an emergency signal, you know, because the Cardassians are not, he's not in Cardassian territory.
No.
So why is this Cardassian, you
It's kind of
know,
weird.
whatever it is, it's a what kind of Cardassian ship is it? A patrol ship? So
It's a
it's like a,
patrol ship, yeah.
yeah, he knows this is not, shouldn't be happening. They hail him, Gull of Vex on screen. He orders them to stop and let them come on board.
Right. Did you just interrupt very quickly? When
Yeah,
Golovek
go.
comes to the monitor, he says, "Mr. O'Brien, we've spoken before." That refers to the conversation they had in the episode Playing God when O'Brien had to contact Cardassia for assistance in exterminating a colony of Cardassian voles. Do you remember the voles, those little
Oh,
creatures
that's
in there?
right. I
So
sure
he has a
do.
conversation with the actor who plays Kolovec, but in that episode, they only credited him as Cardassian officer and not Cardassian officer Avec at all. So
Oh,
there you go.
interesting. So now his
They brought him
role
back
has
and gave him
become,
a
they brought
name.
him back. They liked him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gullivec says, "Stop, let us come on board." Miles thinks about it and he's like, "We didn't do anything wrong." Like, sure, that's fine. So they do. They come on board. They inform him that he's under arrest.
Yeah, they don't even say anything before that. He's just like, "We're
Nope.
here to arrest you." That's the first thing
Yeah.
he says. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought at first he told them they couldn't come on board.
He
Because
did. And
there's
then he
just,
says, "If you don't
oh.
beam us, let us be lower your shields and let us beam
Yes.
aboard. We will then take, you know,
We're gonna
actions. Yeah,
blow
we're
you
gonna
up.
blow you
Okay.
up." Yeah. So then he lets him
Yeah.
on. And
Yeah,
then the
that's
first
not
thing he says,
cool.
like, "You're under arrest," is all he says.
I did feel like when they beamed on board, and this is me nitpicking, I probably will nitpick a lot in this
Okay.
episode. But it was a shot from kind of the camera left side of Miles and Keiko, and then it cut to a shot that was almost the same position, just wider to
Oh.
beam them in. So I would call that a jump cut, which is just something a little unsettling. It's like
It's
when
distracting.
it's distracting when you go from one angle, you really want to go to a reverse angle. Like that's the patterns we're familiar with. When you jump from the same angle to the same angle, just a different size, it can feel a little unsettling. Like things aren't matching, it's jumping around. And their beaming to me felt like a jump cut. And yeah, I was surprised
But the
that
whole
they.
moment, I'm going to play devil's advocate, but the whole
A little
moment,
jarring.
yes, the whole moment is already jarring to begin with and very unsettling because the vacation has been basically halted and these Cardassians have just beamed aboard. So maybe the use of that was to give even the viewer the
Purposeful.
feeling of being unsettled as well. So I'm playing
Yeah,
devil's
maybe.
advocate on that one.
Okay.
Right. But
All
it's
right.
definitely not true to form of what we're used to,
It's
which
not
is show
typical,
this and
yeah.
then flip
No.
around, show
And
the
then
reverse.
either reverse angle or cut to a very different angle or a much wider angle. It was kind of in the middle to me. It felt like jump cutty.
Got it.
Yeah, they come on board. He's like, I don't know, I didn't do anything. What did I do? And they don't tell him. They just say you're going to be imprisoned on Cardassia Prime. We'll send Keiko back to safety. And he tries to push past him, but they stun Miles and he collapses. He kind of goes back and forward like a danger Matalone moment. It's the old fall down in the chair.
I didn't really see that, but okay.
You didn't?
I was more enamored with Keiko screaming out Miles all the time. Miles, just
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff in this, and then I'm going to stop beating a dead horse. There was a lot of stuff in this to me, if I'm being honest.
Horse is dead.
There's a lot of stuff that felt like it might have been Avery's first time directing, I'll be frank. Because I was like, oh, it doesn't feel as standard as kind of Star Trek usually does. It felt very different than most other. Like there was a lot of great actor moments. But in terms of the shot making, it felt like bumpy to me. It felt like sometimes the camera was doing something at odds with the content of the story or the emotional moment of the characters in the scene. The shot making felt a bit at odds quite often in this
With
episode.
what was
Yeah.
happening in the scene.
With the story, but the actor's work was really interesting and great. So I think Avery was really focusing in on that and maybe his choice of where to put the camera, what lens to use. Might have been a little more finessed. I don't think he was putting as much attention on that sometimes.
And Marvin was the DP, and Marvin
Yeah.
was always very opinionated.
How was he with Avery though? Like, did he?
I wasn't in that episode very much.
Yeah. But in general, was like, what did Marvin, was he very deferential to Avery, or did he say,
You know
Avery,
what? It's
I think
such
we've got to
a.
do it like this?
I honestly, the only episode I was in a lot where Avery directed, where I remember being in it a lot, was Rejoined.
But that was much later. Yeah.
But in
And so
general,
that
if
was Jonathan West, who's a
right.
totally different kind of person to work with.
Totally different.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I think in this one, it felt like maybe Avery said, hey, let's put the camera there. And my guess is that maybe Marvin didn't feel like he could say, oh, that's not a good place to put it. And so Marvin just did it. And then I think because Avery hadn't directed before, maybe there was a little less sophistication or, about some of that
Right,
shot
there could have been
making.
tension for that too.
Maybe.
So next up, we have an exterior shot of the Cardassian homeworld. We're on the planet's surface. This is actually the first appearance of Cardassia Prime on DS9.
Really?
And the planet had previously appeared in the TNG two-parter, Chain of Command Part 1 and Part 2. And that's it. So that TNG appearance, and now on DS9 is the very first time that we see Cardassia Prime. And Herman Zimmerman, the production designer, said he took inspiration in the set design from George Orwell's 1984.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that novel. So the final look of Cardassia, Zimmerman explained, was Spartan, uncompromising, and merciless are all adjectives that you could use to describe Cardassia. Yeah.
I
And it's
thought
a matte painting,
that
basically,
matte
right? Yeah.
painting, which probably Dan Curry did
Yes.
based on Herman's thoughts,
Yes.
that matte painting looked like the Thames River in London to me for some reason. It looked
Yeah,
like St.
I get
Paul's on
that.
one side. It totally looked
Okay.
like a aerial view of London to
Actually,
me.
that picture looked really pretty to me, but
Yeah.
at the inside the courtroom was like bleak.
Yeah. The courtroom was actually a redress of the holosuite, your holosuite set.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
Yes.
Interesting.
So, yeah. But it did. It didn't look that bad. And the funny, maybe Dan Curry was thinking of London when he did do that
it looked
actual
like
matte
the
painting.
Thames. It
Yeah.
did. I mean, it has the Cardassian sort of, you know, arches or
arches,
whatever.
But the layout of that river,
the way
you
the
were,
river runs, it looks
it was the
exactly
Thames.
like shots of the Thames
Yeah.
I've seen.
Like maybe
Totally.
that inspired the
Yeah, for sure.
Template. It was a
Yes.
template.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yep. Spark something uncommon this holiday with just the right gift from Uncommon Goods.
The busy holiday season is here, everybody, and Uncommon Goods makes it less stressful with incredible gifts for everyone on your list, all in one spot. Garrett, have I ever told you I have been shopping at Uncommon Goods for years?
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually have a membership there that gets me all kinds of perks, including free shipping. You know, every holiday I look for gifts for my kids there, and they're all customized, personalized, and my kids love it. In fact, this last year I got Rebecca a puzzle that was customized with our names as street signs, and it's amazing. It feels store-bought, but it's made just for us.
Very cool. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches, so shop now before they sell out this holiday season.
Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade.
Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, not the same old selections you could just find anywhere. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice.
Wow, that's amazing.
They've donated more than $3 million to date.
Well, to get your 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/TDF.
That's uncommongoods.com/TDF. For 15% off, don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.
Well, we go into a processing area next. O'Brien's pushed into a spotlight here. Did you see that this was a movie crane they were using for the spotlight? Did you notice
that? No.
That was a stage
That's
crane.
That's what that was?
Wow.
Oh, yeah, my goodness.
The spotlight's kind of floating around.
Yeah.
It was
a regular crane.
A Fisher stage crane. Yeah.
Wow.
It's like, oh my God, they're photographing
the crane, the actual
piece of
equipment
movie
used
equipment.
To make Hollywood magic. They're using that.
It worked. I mean, I guess if you're not familiar with the equipment, you wouldn't notice it. But to me, I was like, oh wow, they didn't even try to cover it up and make it look like. It looks like a crane to me.
Well, look how much money they spent on the actors with
the makeup,
Cardassian makeup. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing the sets were sparse and
exactly.
A little extra crane. Let's throw that one in the mix.
That's a freebie. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Well, the floating spotlight is on Miles. He's standing in the spotlight. He keeps giving his name and rank over and over. So they just decide to process him. They throw him up against a wall, cut his clothes off.
Oh, they made him take his clothes off.
They ripped it off of him.
They ripped him. They cut him
in the
back.
Oh, it's awful. Oh, they cut it from the back.
Yeah.
Then they do something to his eye, like some laser thing goes in his eye. And then they reach down with these pliers. And from where we see it, our perspective, we don't know what he's doing. Like, I had no clue they were pulling a tooth out. I was like,
they
pull
a tooth out.
Yeah,
I thought that. I actually got kind of teary watching it. It was like, I know this is acting, but this is really hard to watch my friend go through.
Yeah,
I know.
Sure.
Yeah,
sure. It was brutal. It was a deep dive
into
kind of torture and brutality. Yeah.
It was painful.
Yeah, they pull a tooth. They give him shots.
Yeah.
They cut a lock of hair from him. And then we meet Macbar for the first time, who's going to turn out to be the judge, I guess, in a sense.
Yeah. And isn't she a joy?
Isn't she? Well, at first she seems like she's on his side. She's like, you know, I told you you were told he should not be harmed.
Right.
At
the beginning, she was defending him, but then, no.
Just for one sentence.
For one sentence. Exactly.
I'm with you for one sentence and one sentence alone. What was that thing that covered his face? Okay. So after they pull his tooth out, mm-hmm. they put him in the thing, then they put some type of like little glowing light on him that goes, near, near. Do you remember that at the end? I'm like, what is that?
A little bit. Yeah, I don't know.
I had no clue what that was.
More maybe torture light.
Torture light. I love it.
So Macbar's there. She's not happy that he's injured. They're like, we just restrained him. We didn't do anything. Yeah, right. We just saw it. It was torture. She does take Miles O'Brien, kind of walks him out, apologizes for how he's been treated. He's tossed these a set of clothes, but he's kind of just holding it over his, you know, private parts as he, you know, shuffles through the prison area.
Yeah, and when he was sitting in the chair and you could see his itty bitty butt crack, and it was like, yeah. No, he's really sitting there naked, poor man. Naked.
I know.
You saw his butt. I didn't see his butt crack.
I saw,
you saw
his butt.
You watched
side
it
butt.
Twice. Yes, I did.
And it's probably not a digital butt crack.
I wasn't say looking,
his real,
though.
His real butt. You weren't looking, though.
You weren't looking for it. It just happened to be there when you glanced.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. Oh, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh.
He has been undressed in multiple episodes.
More
now.
Than anybody
more than
else
any
in your
other
show.
DS9 character.
Maybe Nana. Nana's been undressed a few
really?
Times.
Really? Yeah. I'm going to vote O'Brien.
He took a milk bath.
She did, but I'm still going to say, but that was her other character, her you know.
That's true. That's
remember?
True.
If you're talking about
mirror universe.
Yeah, we're not talking about mirror universe. We're talking about real universe, and that would be O'Brien showing a lot of skin over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Well, she apologizes for how he was treated. She tells Miles he'll have a conservator soon, and he's like, what's that? He's confused. He doesn't even know what he's accused of, and she just basically says, well, all in good time. Just be patient. Poor Miles O'Brien.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, very sad. Well, we go to Commander's office next. Keiko's there, super upset. Miles told her all about the torture on Setlik 3. She's heard him talk about this. She knows that he must be terrified and that this is horrible. And she sort of walks out of Sisko's office, and he chases her out to reassure her and say everything's going to be okay when a call comes in.
The initial scene when they're inside the office, Sisko's first line says, Starfleet has ordered the Enterprise, the Prokofiev, and the Valdemar to the border of the DMZ. Well, that is homage to The Next Generation, because they had just aired their final episode, and then this episode, the next week of DS9, airs. So they were
interesting.
Sort of, yeah. So that was this
referring
was like,
to the Enterprise.
Yeah, to the end of TNG in a
tie
way.
Them
so,
together.
Give him a little nod.
Yeah, a little
it's
nod.
It's an
to
Easter
TNG.
Egg.
It is. So that's one little thing I want to throw in there.
Macbar appears on the big screen. Says Miles's trial is scheduled. The verdict's already been decided, as we had heard before.
So don't stress about that.
Don't worry. It's already
don't
done.
Don't worry. Yeah.
Odo volunteers. He asks about, does he have a Nestor yet? And he would like to volunteer to be Miles's Nestor. So clearly Odo knows some of the, you know, Cardassian ways.
Because Deep Space Nine was the Cardassian.
Yeah, Terek Nor.
Base
right?
station.
Yeah.
Well, what's funny about this
was
scene?
Was that Terek Nor?
Huh?
Deep Space Nine was Terek Nor?
That's right. That's the Cardassian way of calling
that
it.
That was
Deep
their name.
Nine, their name for it. Since they built it.
I forgot that.
You forgot
that. I just forgot that.
This is good
that
we're
kind of.
See, when you build the restaurant,
thank
you
for
you can name the restaurant. Yeah.
It's been a while.
Yeah, I know.
Sounds like a planet to me.
It does. It does. But what was interesting to me, I don't know if either of you picked this up, but Renee refers to that term, Nestor, as Nestor. Okay.
Yeah.
And then she, Macbar, initially says Nestor, but then at the end she goes Nestor. So it's almost like the Vulcan way of sensors and sensors. Yes.
Okay, but
sensor, sensor.
That would be a Judy Brown.
Yeah.
Yes, it would be a Judy Brown.
Because I believe if the first person to say the word, and that's the Star Trek way, and it would be Renee. Renee said Nestor. So she should follow Nestor from the rest of, from that. And she did when she responded to him. But at the end, she goes, I grant you to be Nestor. She changes the pronunciation. It's no longer
but
Nestor.
But we did that. We did that on Voyager with Chakotay. Chakotay. And that, it took us months before we all settled in on the same way of pronouncing his name.
Yeah. But it's so funny because it's the same syllable. It's the same two. It's
as
the same
sensors.
Sound as sensors, which is Tim Russ and
Vulcan.
And Vulcan, the Vulcan pronunciation
Leonard,
of it. Leonard Nimoy said sensors. But everyone else in Star Trek says sensor. So we don't say censors. So that's what's happened here. Nestor and Nestor.
American.
So. We're American. Yes,
we're American.
We're American, and it's a censor.
Well, Odo volunteers to be his Nestor, and Odo's the Nestor.
These poor people. Would you just tell the story, man?
I'm trying to tell you. Sorry. Macbar says, Odo, you can't be the Nestor. That's how she says it.
Yeah, she says.
You can't be the Nestor because you need credentials. And he says, oh, I've got them from back in the Taric Nor days.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She's thanks bummed to Gul Dukat.
Right. Yes. She's not happy about this, but she's like, okay, fine. You can be the Nestor.
Nestor. You can be the American if you want.
I have to tell you, how often is it you can say, I am so happy you played that Gul Dukat card.
That's true.
You because
that's
it was
like never.
Never. Exactly. Yeah. But that moment, oh, thank goodness.
Thank goodness.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she agrees. And then she tells them that his execution is scheduled for next week. And Keiko goes along with Odo and they head out. Family is allowed to go. The Nestor is allowed to go. And
Sisko wanted to go, but he's not allowed to go.
He's not allowed to go.
No.
No.
Now we are in O'Brien's cell, and now we're introduced to the conservator. Or is it the conservator?
I like conservator.
You want to say conservator? Okay, so Kovat appears, the Cardassian conservator. And it's so interesting because these public defenders, all they do... they do it for show. There's nothing that they're doing to get these clients
to help
off of
the clients.
No, it's not about defeating the charges because the charges and everything's already decided. So it's all about putting on the show. But like Terry said, the minute he came on screen, we both thought, this is Herman Munster. There's no way he's still alive. How could he have been in this episode?
So weird.
It was so bizarre seeing him.
Then he started talking and I thought, oh, no, he's not.
No. Yeah, but not the same voice. Not the same voice.
He was good though. Fritz Weaver was good
he was through
the makeup. Like
he was
all
really
of his,
good.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, that sometimes when you're older and doing full prosthetic makeup, it can be almost disability, you know, it may make
distracting
you distract you from being able to act and you get really stiff.
No, he was great.
He was so good. And he really explains the role of the court and the rules and everything about Cardassian court, which is pretty much as an American, we watch this episode and we watch this scene. We're like, this is so unfair. There's no fairness here. There's no equanimity. Mm-mm. It's all about one side, and the state is always right. The actual individual has no say. The state, it comes first, but before everything. And even O'Brien's like, why do I even need you? I mean, there's no reason for me to even have you as my lawyer. You're not doing anything. But O'Brien is still very intent on saying that he is not going to concede. He's not guilty of crime. And he holds this entire procedure in contempt. And then Kovat actually flips that. He's like, okay, that's good. Maintain that level of arrogance in the courtroom, and we should put on a very good show indeed, is what he says.
I love the way Kovat explains their justice, though. He talks about, well, once again, justice will be done. Mm-hmm. Our lives will be reaffirmed, safe and secure.
Yeah.
Here in Cardassia, all crimes are solved, all criminals are punished, and all endings are happy. I love this. Like, it's just delivering... you know, the perfect story to everybody, even though it bears no resemblance to reality or the truth.
Yeah.
But they just want everybody to be reassured. And kind of the population sort of lives through these trials, these you know, public trials. And they put them on the big screen out in town. Like as walking down the street,
like
there's
a
big
show.
Screen. Yeah, like it's a reality show.
Yeah. Very Orwellian. Yeah, for sure.
We go to the weapons locker, I think, next. This is where our heroes back on Deep Space Nine. They see a bunch of metal sitting around the weapons locker, but the photon warheads are gone.
Crates full of scrap metal.
Full of scrap metal. And they think that maybe the metal was transferred at the precise moment that the warheads were stolen. That's why the sensors didn't detect anything.
Correct.
They do see that Miles O'Brien's voice signature is what opened the door, but then there was this saturation field that blocked the scanner, so they don't know exactly what happened once Miles came in.
Right.
But it seems to them.
I wanted to say, wait, if it was Miles, he would have erased his voice too.
Yes, because he's that good.
This is where I'll say, like, if we didn't have that earlier scene, if that never existed and we came to this moment and they're like, we heard his voice and we didn't know that someone recorded or anything, we can learn that later. But right now we didn't know that, we would feel like, oh, maybe Miles did this, you know? Yeah.
That would be much more powerful, so much better. Yeah.
Right.
Don't show
Boone dropping the smile. Don't show that at all. Don't show Boone even playing the recording thing. You just cut that right out.
No. Yeah. O'Brien doesn't bump into him. We just cut from the little elevator thing to him being on the runabout.
Yeah. I have a whole different opening to this episode. I'll talk about it in our, missing scenes. I'm telling you, that whole opening to me, taking those two scenes out, ruined. In the trash. But anyway, they hear his voice, the saturation field. So they don't know what happened. Bashir gets really mad when they think that Miles did it, because Bashir's buddies with Miles. I like that.
Yeah.
He didn't have much to say, but he got mad.
Yeah. I mean, because, of course, they're buddies, but he says,
Kira was like first to, she was like, she's very quick to
blame people. Yeah. She's very paranoid. Yeah. Miles could have done it.
She is.
Yeah. Because she's the one that says, give them to the Maquis. Because Bashir asks, what would he do with these photon warheads? And Kira immediately says, give them to the Maquis. So she's already on that trail.
I've got it figured out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But they don't show her unknotting it. And then suddenly she's on his side.
No.
Yeah.
That must have been a little maddening to play.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was a little jumpy. Some of the points of view and the attitudes, for sure. Anyway, Sisko says he wants to find the other guy. And they're like, what are you talking about? He goes, the one that was going to receive the weapons. That's the Maquis you were talking about. Mm-hmm. He wants to find any possible Maquis that could have been on the station recently. So that's how they kind of finish that scrap metal beat
scene. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Back in O'Brien's cell, Odo visits O'Brien as the Nestor.
This is a really sweet scene.
It is a good scene. I thought Odo coming in, he was kind of drilling Miles a bit at the top. He's like, you know, did you do this? You know, he was putting the pressure on him, I guess, is what I'm saying. But I thought that was good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was good that he was like trying to clear everything. And then Miles with that speech where it's really emotional about honor and integrity. And he wants his daughter to trust him. And beautifully done. Beautifully.
Yeah. That was a really epic monologue.
Yeah.
And we don't have a lot of moments like that for O'Brien. Well, for any of us, but O'Brien especially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, where you see a grown man sharing his vulnerability.
Yeah.
And he also says how much he doesn't really know. They don't know each other, Odo and O'Brien.
Yeah.
So this is a great opportunity where they get to know each other a little bit better.
Yeah.
It's a great scene for both characters. That's,
mm-hmm.
that's absolutely. Not the, yeah, we love it. It's a good scene.
Well, it feels like Odo comes in hard. Like, did you do this? Tell me, you know, everything you know. And after that speech, he believes it, just like we do as an audience. Like, Miles is innocent. And then Odo says, all right, you know, you don't have to be a martyr. Not everybody who's accused has to die. He basically says, when we go in there tomorrow in court, don't cry. Just look innocent. Stay strong. And this is where he tells Miles finally, I'm your Nestor. And he's going to try his best to help him. So Odo also knew about pulling the teeth. Did you notice that, by the way?
What? Did he?
Yeah, because he talks about how at 10 years old, the Cardassians all have to have a molar baby or a small molar pulled for their identification.
Mm-hmm.
Odo says that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
All Cardassians are one tooth short.
Oh, got it.
Okay, so we're back in ops. I wrote down Dax is really smart again.
Oh, I love you.
It's great. She's always figuring this crap out.
She says, they let me do it.
Yeah. It's great. You analyze the voice. You're like, that's not Miles. It was reconstructed, the data wave, the sound waves or whatever.
Yeah.
You're smart. Smart science stuff. Mm-hmm. Pretty cool.
And that's kind of where tech is now, which is crazy. AI can actually take a voice recording of any person, famous or not, and they can then extract everything and make that voice say whatever they want. You know what I'm saying? Which is scary. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very scary.
Well, Dax figures out this was AI, basically.
Yeah.
And Kira comes in. She She found 12 people from the DMZ or the Demilitarized Zone who've been on the station could be Maquis.
Right.
She does identify Boone, though. Raymond Boone is his name. People saw him talking to Miles on the promenade, and immediately they kind of hone in on Boone. Mm-hmm. Back on Cardassia, on the street, it's like Times Square. The Jumbotron is up there. Mm-hmm. Big screen TV, reality TV. Yeah. We're watching this court, the court start, and we cut inside as Macbar starts the trial, asks right away if Miles wants to confess. I love that he said, no thanks.
Yeah. That was
no
great.
Thanks. Yeah.
Not going to do it.
Great mm-mm. delivery. So then she says, okay, well, if you're not going to confess, let's start the trial. Keiko and Odo come in. Odo immediately asks the judge if he can confer with the conservator. And the judge is like, hey, you're not supposed to even talk to me.
That was so weird. Wasn't that weird?
Yeah. She's like, do you know how this works? You're not supposed to talk to me. Just talk to your client, the guys that's accused. And he plays innocent. He's like, oh, it's my first time. I loved his delivery of that.
Oh my goodness.
Very funny. The courtroom looked very cool too. Very dramatic.
I liked it.
I thought
it looked super scary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bleak.
It reminded me of, what's that movie? Metropolis. Mm-hmm. That old mm-hmm. black and white German yeah. film from like the yeah. third 20s or 30s or something.
Yeah.
Wow.
But Odo tells Kovat, sneaks over to Kovat, says that there's new evidence. He tells that's what I meant.
And Macbar. You're doing the hard A on everything, on everyone. Kovat, Macbar. So Macbar and Kovat.
Well, we started being silly.
I know.
Exactly. I got my rodeo
Southern's
hat on.
Coming out.
Because the thing is, the reason why I remember this, I don't want to be the nitpick person, but I remember this because I kept thinking, Cardassians pronounce it. All their vowels are soft, so they would say Mr. Wong if they saw my name. If Cardassians were real, they wouldn't say Wang, they'd say Wong. So that's
all. Interesting.
So that's why I was like,
you should go to Cardassia.
I should. I feel just at home right there.
All right. As soon as we're done this podcast,
I'm going to jump in a shuttle.
I think you'll hate it.
Can I borrow?
I think you'll really hate it.
Will you help me get into a runabout, please, Terry? Please.
I know you love to travel, but I don't think you should go there.
I shouldn't go?
Don't go to Cardassia.
No, let's go on safari instead. I think that would be way more fun.
Fine.
This is a moment, though, where I have to say, so Odo goes over to have a private conversation with
the conservator.
How did you pronounce it? Yeah, the conservator.
The conservator. The Nestor. Macbar. Kovat.
Kovat.
Oh, my.
Kovat.
It's a game show.
Odo is the Nestor.
Yes. Odo's the Nestor, and he's talking to
Kovat.
Kovat.
Yes.
Edwin.
The conservator.
Fred Gwynne.
Fred Gwynne.
Erman Munster. Yes.
But this is a moment.
Oh,
where,
my God.
Again,
it's so Friday, isn't it?
It is.
this is a moment where I thought the shot making was off, because you've got this wide two shot of a private conversation.
Yes.
In that kind of shot, it suggests that everyone in the room can hear you.
Oh, okay.
And then it cuts over to Miles silently looking around in a close-up like this. And I was like,
no,
flip that. Yeah. Miles should be in a wide shot.
I remember thinking, I don't understand what's happening.
Yeah.
Oh.
Because of that.
Oh, because of that. Because
if everyone can hear them,
yes.
And then he's looking around, it's like, that looks like he can't hear.
Exactly.
I'm glad you said that.
This was one of those moments I was like, flip it. You've got the sizes wrong in the tone of what story that's supposed to be happening.
Mm-hmm.
But he does tell the conservator that there's new evidence. Kovat doesn't care. He says, no new evidence is allowed, dude. Like, you don't know what's going on here. Odo asks the judge again, tells her that there's new evidence. She gets really mad. She says he's in contempt of court and it's going to be very painful for him. Does he talk about his teeth in this or something? Doesn't he say something like, I don't have any teeth to pull or something?
Yeah, he does.
Doesn't he?
Yeah. I don't know where it is.
I never thought about that.
Yes,
though. Odo
but
doesn't
he did
have any teeth.
Well, he does, but he could shape shift so that he only does to talk, right? So that we understand what he's saying. That would be my personal take on it.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But you
come
at
him
with pliers.
He'll just make it turn into goo.
What? Goo, yeah.
You'll be pulling goo, not a tooth.
I feel bad for Odo. He's just trying really hard, but he doesn't know
I regret
know
that
the
I have no
rules.
teeth to offer your Bureau of Identification.
Yeah.
That was funny, though. I just never thought about the teeth. You know, like you think Odo's humanoid, but he's not. He's not at all.
I know. It's easy to forget.
Did you talk about Keiko coming in? Keiko comes in the scene, doesn't she?
Keiko and, Keiko and Odo come in at the very top.
Yeah.
They're already in there.
Right.
She's being kind of quiet. And at the end, doesn't the judge say, like, oh, new evidence? Sure. I expected Starfleet was going to make something up with her fancy technology or something like that.
Mockbar also gives Keiko the chance to testify against her husband, who she she completely was like, no, I have no intention of testifying against my husband. So she shuts that down very quickly.
Do you remember the moment?
They are the cutest couple.
They're so cute.
Aren't they cute?
They are.
They're cute.
They're so well matched as a couple. Yeah,
I agree.
Do you remember the moment when Odo goes over to talk to the conservator, Kovat?
Yeah.
And the Kovat goes, please, please just don't ruin this for me. I'm only a year away,
from,
away from
retirement.
I know, that was great. Oh, I'm glad you said that.
That
was hilarious.
Yeah. There was a lot of funny bits in this.
That was funny.
Part of it.
Yes. Kovat's reaction at the very end of the trial when they're released, he has the last line. You remember that?
Oh, that's right.
And he was like, they're going to kill me for this. Like, that's literally. Yes.
He's like, what happened? And then Odo says, you won or something at the end, right?
He goes,
he's like,
kill
I won.
Me.
They're going to kill me.
Kill me. Yeah.
There's
funny.
A lot of funny stuff in this. And Avery, again, like, I don't mean to pile on Avery's shot making. Avery did great with those funny moments. Like,
okay. That's what I'm going to say. I think Avery is a budding genius comic director in terms of like comedic sitcom-y or whatever, or rom-com, you know,
stuff
he would
that.
Do really well with that for sure. Yeah.
Wait till you see Far Beyond the Stars that he directs.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm excited to see the evolution. If he
I'm sure he gets better.
Episodes,
yeah. I'm sure he gets better.
Oh, you're going to enjoy it very much.
Good.
I bet. We go to the commander's office next. They're interrogating Boone. Denies everything.
Yeah.
But Sisko says, you know what? Keep him for questioning. Yeah, there was a funny look with Sisko and Kira near the end when he says, Boone says, I haven't done anything. I don't have anything to be worried about. Again, probably an Avery thing. But I remember Kira and Sisko turn their heads to each other and then they turn back with a smile or something. It was like a very staged moment that I thought, I thought it made me laugh.
Okay. I didn't catch that, but I have to watch again.
There's some good.
You mean
acting
like
stuff.
They were calling him out on his.
Yeah, like
shit.
We don't believe him. Do you believe
I
him?
Don't
no,
either.
I don't believe him. Hold him.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like, nice try, but no.
So it was synchronized. It was that.
But it was very
was totally
synchronized.
Like, look, and then like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Another probably Avery bit there that made me laugh. It was good.
Yeah.
We go to the infirmary next. It's very dark as Bashir comes in.
Yeah.
The lights don't work. What?
It's weird because without any lights there, I didn't even know we were in the infirmary. I'm like, where are we? I was completely confused. I was like,
I thought it was his quarters at first.
I did too.
Yeah.
I did too. Yeah.
I thought it was his quarters until he goes around the corner and then you see more of the infirmary.
Yeah, then you see
there.
The, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
A mystery man appears in the shadows and from a distance in the background, Bashir's standing there in the foreground. He says, it wasn't the Maquis. We didn't do this. We have nothing to do with it. And Bashir tries to talk to him, but before he can hear any more, he turns around and the mystery man is gone.
He's not even credited. He's not even, there's no credit for that person.
That's weird.
It is very weird. I mean, why wouldn't, I mean, he got residuals, right? For using his voice for sure. But they didn't credit him at all. All we have is the credit for Cardassian voice and not Maquis voice, which should have been that.
Yeah. There should have been something.
Yeah.
Well, we go back in the courtroom and Evek is testifying. Were there torpedoes in the courtroom?
What?
I think there was a torpedo in the courtroom as
as evidence. Okay,
we finally see these stolen torpedoes.
For a second, I'm like, what?
Evek is testifying now. He blames the Maquis for this. He basically says, I got information from reliable sources that it was the Maquis. And then Odo objects. He's like, so how did you get all this information again? Like, exactly who? And he goes, reliable sources. He's just full of it.
And Mockbar takes that as an acceptable answer. He's like, yeah, no, that's valid in this courtroom. As long as it's a reliable source.
If you say it's reliable, then that's
we believe
fine.
You. Yeah. It's the weirdest form of justice I've ever seen. All right.
Yeah. Odo is very upset about this.
Yes.
And Mockbar's getting tired of Odo. Mm-hmm. She now says, this is the longest trial in the history of Cardassia. I loved. Yeah. It was very funny. Did you notice Did you notice, by the way, here's some shot making that I did like of Avery's. He was shooting a very low angle on Mockbar up on that pedestal.
Yes.
To make her look very ominous and strong and imposing. Mm-hmm. And he was shooting a very extreme down angle on anyone in the court when they were talking to her.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that I thought was very well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Low angle Mockbar. Anyone not Mockbar, high angle.
Right? Yeah. Like her point of view, looking down
at them,
people.
Like they're little ants. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's cool. And then we cut to the infirmary and Boone is there. They have questions for him. They start to ask him, so you haven't talked to your parents or your wife in 8 years. And they pinpoint that it was right after Setlick 3 that he kind of cut off all this communication. And he says he was discharged from Starfleet around the same time. So as they're revealing what they know, he starts to run and they put him in a chair, and I thought they were going to pull a Cardassian on him. Like they were going to torture him, cut his clothes off,
pull a tooth off,
waterboarding.
But they just give him a shot. And then Bashir starts taking a medical tricorder. And I was like, what is he doing with a medical tricorder?
He's examining him.
He's examining his DNA, basically. Mm-hmm. I'm back in the courtroom. They're in recess and Keiko and Miles are talking. And he doesn't want her to be there when he's sentenced. He still believes like he's got no chance in this thing.
Oh, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't look good for him.
No.
Mm-mm.
Well, the trial resumes. He doesn't want to speak, but Mockbar insists you have to testify. And Kovat asks him, were you abused as a child? This is his defense lawyer, right?
Right. Yeah.
She's not helping.
Or was it spousal abuse?
Spousal abuse? No.
Any abuse that's happened.
No abuses.
So weird.
Yeah.
So weird.
And then the judge asks how many Cardassians he killed. Mm-hmm. This was an awkward moment.
It was.
Because Miles is like, none. At first he goes, none. I haven't killed any. And she goes, no, in the war.
Right.
And he's like, well, none since the war. And then she's got a quote, I think, about, you know, you said something about the bloody Cardies can't be trusted.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he admits it. I didn't understand why he was admitting this. She's like, you have to admit it. You have to tell the truth. Why can't he lie? Like, what does it matter? Why just say no?
Well,
no, I didn't kill anybody. No, I didn't
who
say that.
Like, said why? That he said
what's
that
the
there
downside?
Was a reason he didn't. He said no at first.
Yeah.
And then there was something she said that made.
Like he admitted it. I thought it was just her
like
saying,
he had to.
You have to tell the truth. That's the part that I was like, oh, I have to tell the truth. Well, yes, then I'll tell the truth. No, you just lie. Like, why would you, if you're not getting a fair trial, why would you give them anything mm-hmm. to help them? Mm-hmm. That was how I felt.
But the fact that she knows what he said, it means there are Cardassian spies everywhere for them to know. I know she says it publicly stated, but still, there's a lot of underhanded things happening where the Cardassians.
Yeah, it was a confusing moment to me. The fact that he's admitting anything, I don't know why he should just say no, I'm not talking.
Well, he said I declined to answer, right? And Mockbar says, well, there are no grounds in Cardassian law which permit you to decline. Answer the question, you know, so you can't even decline. You have to say something, yes or no.
But I guess that's what I'm saying is like, just because someone says you have to, like if I say, Garrett, you have to tell me your darkest secret. You'd be like, no, I don't.
Right. So he could just hold it like, in and just
why
not
do you,
answer.
Yeah, just hold it or just lie.
Yeah. Or just say what's like, on Terry's hat. What does your hat say again, Terry? It says,
mind your own damn business.
Yeah, that's what he should have been wearing.
O'Brien
should have been
said.
Wearing that hat saying, mind your own damn business, Mockbar. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He could have said, oh, I have to answer. Fine. Mind your own damn business is my answer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, just as Miles is about to be sentenced, Sisko and Boone enter. And when Mac Bart looks over and sees Boone, suddenly she sets Miles free. You're free to go with Cisco.
So this is the very first mention that the Cardassians use cosmetic alterations in order to infiltrate their enemies. It's the very first time in DS9. Later examples of this were Seska on Star Trek Voyager.
Yes, and
that's in another. Discovery
had one. Is that right? Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Well, all of this gets wrapped up. So Miles is set free, back on the runabout. The whole thing is explained. Miles and Keiko are going to get dropped off for their vacation, we learn in the scene. But as you said, Boone was missing his first molar, and the DNA analysis confirmed that he was Cardassian. Mm-hmm. He was surgically altered. Mm-hmm. I guess the real Boone was taken prisoner on Setlik 3 and died in detention. I think they mentioned his wife even said he came back from captivity, a very different man.
Right.
So, all of this is starting to make sense here.
Also, Keiko mentions that many people after Setlik 3 were not themselves. That means there's even more Cardassian
I didn't catch
cosmetic
that.
Alterations, guys.
Teaser. Boy.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Let's see if they take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm. Let's see.
Or that could be the DS9
looks like
movie.
You know what happens.
Yeah.
I don't really. I don't remember.
I'll just mind my own damn business.
I don't remember. Okay?
Just mind your own damn business, Robbie.
But they do drop them off on their vacation at the end of this, which I thought was very, very sweet.
Yeah. It was.
Yeah. Because Miles is like, wait, I don't have my camera, my holo camera. I don't have my pads, my work, and nothing to read. Keiko's like, perfect.
It's a nice, cute ending.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you look at this as a rom-com episode between Keiko and her husband with funny moments, it's very good if you look at it that way.
Hanging on the razor's edge of a Cardassian death? Yes. Nothing says comedy more.
Yes.
Nothing says rom-com like a little Cardassian death trial. What's our lesson?
You tell us your lesson for this episode, Robbie McNeil.
Don't write those scenes that give away the whole plot in the first teaser of the whole show. Maybe start with that. I'll get into that more in our bonus material.
Right.
But
what's your real lesson?
My real theme is that if you're truly, if you or me or anybody is truly innocent, don't give up on trying to show the truth. To reveal the truth, because the truth will set you free.
Yeah.
So for ourselves, like, live your truth. And if you're innocent, if you really, haven't done anything wrong, in the end, like, the truth will come out if you keep trying. So that's my lesson there.
That's good. Tara, do you want to
tear?
Well, I couldn't think of anything better than standing. I mean, but then what you're saying, Robbie, stand up for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tell the truth and don't do anything other than trust yourself. I mean, he knew he was innocent.
Yeah.
100%. I don't suppose there's anything you can do in those situations, but I think people that don't trust that it's important to stand by their integrity and their truth, they're the ones who give false confessions because they're scared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You got to stick with what you know is true.
Garrett, what about you?
Well, I am on the same page with you, Robbie, because I did write The Truth Will Set You Free. That was my exact sentiment on this one. So,
yeah, I think that is the lesson here.
Well, even if, ultimately he could have gotten executed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if that's the case, then it's still better to go out standing
up for what you believe. Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. To concede and say, I am
you
guilty.
Anyway.
You're going to die anyway. Well,
didn't the judge said this is the longest trial in Cardassian history? Because he kept insisting on his innocence, it made this the longest trial
ever. Yes.
And if it wasn't long, he would have been sentenced before Mark Grayson, a.k.a. Boone, showed up. And so by insisting and making this the longest trial in history, that was part of what helped save him.
Yeah.
So. Mm-hmm. The winning submission on our Patreon poll for the theme or moral of this episode is submitted by Sherry Kidner. O'Brien must suffer. That is so grim.
That's so grim. That's not a moral. That's a punishment.
Well, interesting that the winning submission is O'Brien Must Suffer, because according to the Star Trek Deep Space Nine companion, they list Tribunal or Tribuneral among the annual Torture O'Brien episodes, sometimes referred to as O'Brien Must Suffer episodes. So it's a thing, Robbie. They you know, O'Brien suffers probably as much as Harry Kim suffered throughout Voyager, it seems.
That's true. You were the one on our episodes. Show.
Yeah. Yeah, O'Brien's the Harry Kim of
I look forward to much more O'Brien suffering.
I do too.
And I mean that in a loving way.
In a loving way, exactly. Exactly. Well, thank you everyone for tuning in to our recap and discussion of the episode Tribunal. And join us next week when we will be recapping and discussing the episode The Jem'Hadar, the final episode of season two with Armin. So we want to thank Terry for joining us and co-hosting with this episode. Thank you, Terry.
Thanks, Terry.
Thank you.
For all of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material and a little bit more Terry. And for everyone else, we'll see you next time. Thanks. Bye.